while the world whizzes by. Enjoy a moment of me time with Tim Horton's $6 breakfast bundle. Savor a small hot or iced coffee, then add your choice of a mouth-watering hot breakfast sandwich and a crispy golden hash brown and your pick of a classic donut.
Yeah.
All for $6, all just for you. Make your mornings all about me time with our $6 breakfast bundle. Available at your neighborhood Tim Hortons. Price and participation vary. Terms apply.
Welcome to Marvel Vision, a podcast about Marvel, the MCU, and right now, Agatha, all along, I'm Spooky Alex.
I'm Haunted Justin.
And I'm Pete.
Just a regular old, normal old Pete.
The scariest thing of all. Pete is haunted enough. Yes.
And we are going to be talking about the first two episodes of Agatha, All Along, Seekest Thou the Road, and Circle Sown with Fate, Unlock Thy Hidden Gate. So if you haven't seen them on Disney Plus,
are you casting a spell, Alex?
Yeah.
Alex, you're casting a spell on me.
Am I enchanting you? Anyway, we're going to talk about those episodes. If you haven't watched them on Disney Plus, turn away because we're definitely going to get into spoilers as we break them down, talk about them, our reactions to the show that is coming very late after WandaVision. But to give you a brief overview of the plot of the first two episodes, we pick up several years after WandaVision, after Doctor Strange
and the Multiverse
of Madness. Yes, Pete. Do you want to do the recap? I'll turn it over to you. Go ahead.
No, he likes to do instant corrections.
I'm literally just
Do you know what it is? Do you know what it is? It's not helping, actually. You are being like Agatha on this show.
This coven's getting off to a weird start, just like Agatha's.
I want to stick this coven in the oven. You know what I'm talking about?
So don't blast me. I can't do your powers that way.
So Agatha's been trapped in Wanda's spell for 3 years at this point. In Westview, she is experiencing a Mayor of Easttown-style show. But due to the shenanigans of Teen, played by Joe Locke, and Rio Vidal, played by Aubrey Plaza, she manages to break out of the spell, realize she doesn't have any power, and because of that, some maybe good witches, because she's a bad witch, but let's call them villainous witches, called the Salem Seven, are after her. They absolutely want to obliterate her. She manages to gather a coven in time to walk the witch's road, which will ostensibly give her her power back, as well as giving these other witches a little something, a gift, a boon at the end. And that's where we end the second episode, them escaping the Salem Seven, starting to walk the witch's road, and going on their merry old way. Now, normally we'd talk about these episodes separately, but they did drop, and I do think, without ahead too much, these very much are part one and part two of a two-part premiere, so I think it was good that they dropped them both at once. But overall impressions, why don't we do that? It has been years since WandaVision. We really haven't gotten any Marvel TV in a good long while as well. So what did you think? Was it exciting to have it back? Were you bummed out? I guess if you don't like it, you're a misogynist, so let's go ahead.
Oh, wow. Nice. That's intense. First off, I was happy with the Marvel flip. I thought it was a nice adjustment, to the show. So it made me very happy.
It really? I actually want to ask you that because I was bummed out about it. We got the new Marvel television logo, which is just like a quick little sting and tuning in the Marvel logo. I missed the Marvel flip. So it's crazy to hear you say that, Pete.
Well, I like the fact that we got comics and we got the color purple. So I thought, like, okay, that's a nice Agatha kind of nod.
But
time
has passed, you've grown up, and you hate the Marvel flip now. So you're happy that it was shorter and you could just get it out of the way and get onto the good stuff.
Wow. Do you just want to tell me how I feel about the show?
I'm just trying to help. Wow. I'm just trying to be helpful.
This is good. I think we need to all walk the Marvel flip road.
Take off your shoes first, because when you walk a road, you got to make sure you take off your shoes. Yeah,
that's true. It's the softest part of the forest, the road. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No shirt, no shoes. Looked super. Service. That's what we learned from this episode.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I think for overall, just talking about it, there are moments where I had a blast. There are other moments where I was like, okay, get to it. Like when the cop thing I thought was a fun bit, but then I was like, we're doing this a little long. But I thought it was a kind of a fun thing to lean into, like WandaVision. They're playing with tropes, and it was fun to see Agatha go through the different transformations and kind of remind us, like, I remember WandaVision, remember when she was dressed like this? Oh, the black and white version was cool. So, yeah, there were parts of it that I love the cast. I think that I'm excited for what's to come. But, yeah, there was also parts that I was like, well, this is dragging a little bit. But overall, I think it should be an exciting show. I'm excited to see what's going to happen.
Justin, what about you?
It's an interesting show. It's not, I expected it to be more of a, sort of a reset of ideas, but it turns out maybe this is like the last show out before Marvel was like, hold up, we have to reset how we do things. Because this feels very much like in the middle of a lot of things is my big takeaway. Like, I want it to be super funny, but it doesn't want to be that. Oh, and it wants to be a little bit scary, but it also doesn't want to commit to that because Agatha is funny at her core, technically. So, and there's a lot of cool stuff. I thought the song is really interesting. I think it's shot pretty well. I liked. Yeah. I thought it was scary, especially at the end of the second episode. The black cloaked.
Oh my god! Those the Salem Seven. Super scary. That was, I think, really well done, especially when you saw like one and then there was all seven. And then I'm a sucker for that kind of stuff. It really freaks me the fuck out.
But like a lot of Marvel shows, I feel like they're being so coy with information that it's hard to it's hard to be having as much fun as the show seems to want us to have with all of these characters. And I mean, Agatha, I mean, truly every single character. The only character I can really like feel like I see them is her pet, the sort of sidekick character that we.
Wait, are you talking about her actual pet, Senor Scratchy, or are you talking about Joe Locke as Teed?
Locke as Teed, who she calls pet.
Yeah, because she calls pet. Calls him a couple different things.
I feel like I do understand what he's doing there, but that's the character that they're purposefully hiding the information about in the story of the show. So it just leaves me being like sort of watching a little bit through squinted eyes being like, okay. Oh, that was cool. But I don't have my hands around the whole story.
I think I'm going to end up being then the most positive about it so far because I really like this a lot. I understand what you guys are saying intellectually, but I was immediately into the whole vibe of the show. And I think that's, and I say this complimentarily, I think that's what it's coasting on a lot is sort of like the spooky, witchy, Halloween-y vibe. And from my perspective, it's completely crushing that. So as soon as it gets that, it feels like, a lot of the stuff that they're calling out in the closing credits, like there's a shot of Fairuza Balk from The Craft, and I was like, that's what you're going for. You're going for The Craft, practical magic, that sort of thing, where it's like, okay, something's a little off here. I don't know what it is yet, but it's going to rocket out into something bigger by the end. So I hear what you guys are saying again about like, yes, maybe the True Detective Mayor of Easttown parody, I'll put in quotes, went on for a while, maybe a little longer than it should have.
Well, with that, I didn't even mind the length of it because I was like, oh, maybe this is what we're going to do every episode. Right. It's like start in a fun genre take and let Agatha smash out of it. I'm fully on board with that idea. But the whole thing, it was so close to the actual Mayor of Easttown, True Detective of it. I was like, let it be fun a little, guys.
Let me throw it out there. I think something that I would intuit that the show, and again, this might be like me being immediately into it, but I think it's laying out a lot of information for us. I understand where you're coming from. And again, I'm not saying this specifically, but like for the Marvel brain of, ooh, what are these secrets? I got to figure out these secrets. But I think we do forget that's how plot works. You don't lay everything out immediately. And again, I'm not being like dismissive, but things like, I wanted to call out one specific thing in the, Agnes of Westview based on the data series, WandaVision or whatever it was.
Very cool.
Great job.
Fun. Yeah.
But there's that quick shot of her opening the empty bedroom in her house for Nicholas Scratch, who
not the Nicholas Scratch
from Chilling Adventures of Sabrina.
No, that's exactly who it is.
We don't know that, Alex.
How could it not be? He's coming back. Witch world? I mean, come on, dude.
It's all witches. Witches.
Witches all the way down.
We do love Nicholas Scratch,
but Nicholas Scratch is also the son of Agatha Harkness from the comics. Yes. He's a villain. He is the father of the Salem Seven in the comics. I don't know if they're going to go that far. But what I really liked about that was that worked on so many levels, that quick I don't know, I want to say 30-second shot of her looking in there and looking around the bedroom, because it works on the level of course, on this sort of detective show, she has a tragedy in her past.
Yes.
It's powering her in the future. I was like, great, that works. But it also works on the level of, ooh, it's a Marvel Easter egg, Nicholas Scratch. I know that character from the comics. But it also, I think, potentially works in terms of powering her emotional story, and we'll see how it goes. But, like, I don't think they just threw that in there for no reason. I think they threw it in there to be like, hey, man, we got Agatha for 2 episodes, really, at the end of WandaVision. All she was antagonist. That's really all we got about her. So giving her that, I think that's something real, you know? Like, we also get the locket with the hair in it, and there's a mystery about it. So, mind you, this could all fall apart in some way, but I think there was actually probably a lot of information laid out over the course of that Mare of Easttown parody that is going to pay out over the course of the next 8 episodes.
100%. And that's not the part that is the coyness that's bothering me. I actually like that. The Nick Scratch thing, I think that's really smart. And the mystery around the teen, I think, is great and really well done. The fact that, like, she just can't perceive what he's the information he's trying to communicate, that's smartly done and just a good, like, breadcrumb style mystery. It's more, they don't really say what the Witch's Road is or does, why it's happening, what Agatha's feelings are at any point. Like, she's within the parody, she's sort of generally mad, but it's unmotivated because she's just doing a parody. Exactly.
Detective, yeah.
But then when she comes out of it, she's still sort of the same. We don't get her real pop until the end of the second episode when she's like, why don't you guys shoot me? Just shoot me with your powers. And that was cool. But also,
I believe the line was, blast me, you
blast
bitches.
Blast me, you bitches, which is great. But I also think, yes, but I also was like, oh, sorry, I don't. Now I feel I didn't expect that Agatha in the moment. It made me retroactively miss her the whole time. And I was like, why did we have, like, mad Agatha the whole time without any of the fun underpinning?
Well, yeah, I mean, it was because they were going for the fun detective parody. But to JT Sizzle's point a little bit, I did want, like, because I felt like because they were kind of walking different lines, I wanted them to lean into the detective more. You know what I mean? Like, really make it over the top. Because I was, part of me, I was like, should I be laughing? Or because I know she's trapped in this world, I wasn't sure if I could be laughing because they're doing all these fun detective trope stuff of like, don't you run away from me, perp. I'll chase you down. Like, all the good cop, bad cop, and the, you know, like, kicking the chair out, all that kind of crazy stuff. So I wanted to kind of be in more on the joke, but the whole time was kind of like, because when the Plaza showed up, I was like, okay, great. The Plaza's going to shake her out of this, and now we can get to the road and kind of get it going. I feel like I'm going to like this. I feel like it's just kind of getting good. But man, I also was like, they did this fun thing of, like, you know, at the song end credit, kind of like, yeah, that was the Season of the Witch, cool. And then at the second episode, it was just kind of like spooky music. And I was like, oh, I was waiting for that kind of, like, fun.
Everybody loves that, though. The Halloween spooky music CDs that are just like, doo, 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 and then it's coffin sounds for a little bit. Coffins opening.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I felt like Season of the Witch is up here, and then coffin noises is a little bit of a, you know what I mean?
And you know why it's up there? Because it's more expensive, and they probably only bought it for the first episode.
Well, I think the song over the second credits was the instrumental version of Ballad of the Witch's Road, the main theme, right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And Pete, to what you were saying before about sort of that line between parody and the reality of this detective show, I think that's one of the hardest things to pull off in any sort of show. Jumping the line between comedy and sort of making fun of what's happening and then seriously communicating the stakes and like, oh, wait, this actually is scary. There was a murder. Who are these people? One of the shows that I think does it really well is something like The Boys. They're able to jump back and forth between like satire, parody, and then real character-driven action. And I think this show, it's not, they just decided to not commit to the fun part so they could sustain the plot, it felt like. Because to give another compliment to that first episode, I do think the sort of more scary, like David Lynch-y stuff that's happening at the end and the, you know, the pictures down and the different pictures, like that reality bending stuff, I thought did play well. It's just they set the parody bar. And so I was like, it felt like a turn to get to that. And then I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I mean, there were some really funny parts, but I wanted them to lean in. Like, I thought it was hysterical that there was such a huge line at the library. Like, that was just such a fun throwaway kind of bit of like, oh, I'm going to cut in line. I was like, who are all these people waiting at the library? Like, awesome. It's a funny bit. But also, like, there was that moment where she's like eating a donut, but then kind of like, oh, I'm trying to hide it a little bit. But I was like, lean into the, like, you know, the fact that, like, cops eat donuts and she doesn't want to kind of be like, oh, I'm eating a donut. I was just kind of...
No, I think she was just eating it quickly, honestly. Like, she was walking with it in her mouth, and then she realized she's walking with her mouth, so she's trying to eat it quickly so she doesn't do that.
Yeah, but, like, she's playing a detective and cop donut. Like, it's right there. Like, why not lean into that a little bit? You know what I mean?
All right. The other thing is, like, to your point also, like, you have Catherine Hahn at the center of the show.
The Hahn.
She's like an F1 racer of, like, pulling off comedy with an emotional underpinning,
yeah.
And they just don't have it right there in the writing. So it's like you feel her engine revving, and you don't quite get the peel out that you want. I feel.
I hear what you're saying, but I do want to compliment her physicality throughout these episodes,
God,
particularly
yes.
Like. Granted, she's doing Kate Winslet and Mare of Easttown for a bulk of the first episode, but once she breaks out as she's Agatha, pretty much in every scene she has her mystic fingers going, even though she can't cast spells, which is so cool. And while we're talking about her eating things, before I forget, I want to give a shout out to her eating the corn dog in the mall in the second episode, just like gnawing on it like a dog.
Yeah,
one of the weirdest things I've ever seen on TV, but so funny and so strange.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I even love like the first time, you know, we saw her in the purple. You know what I mean? She was like walking tall, and I loved the way she was kind of swinging it around.
Great costume.
And, yeah.
Shout out to the costumes on the show.
And also, the wardrobe across the board on this show is sick.
The Plaza's kind of like witch outfit was fantastic as well when she attacked her at her home was great.
Sorry. Could you just use that term you just used to just that character? The Plaster?
The Plaza?
The Plaza. The He's Plaza. Talking about Rockefeller Plaza, his favorite place to hang out in New York City.
Nope.
Nice. Fun spot. You mean Aubrey Plaza, of course, playing a villain who is undefined and then left behind, which I was like, cool.
Oh, probably
Wait,
not.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, you think she's going to come back?
I do.
Honestly, I do. If she did come back, that's the biggest flex of all.
Did it? She was like, I'm just here for the beginning, just the setup.
Yep. Well, I mean, weird knife, that weird was knife the handler. Thing.
She was so weird in Legion, too, and, like, very undefined. You know what I mean? So, like, you know, that's her wheelhouse.
I actually thought it was very well-defined. I disagree with you on that because I think we, again, got all the information we needed about her relationship with Agatha in that great fight scene at the end of the first episode where we find out, I mean, we don't have, like, the specific information of why they hate each other, but clearly they hate each other, but also...
Maybe love
Rio,
each other.
Yeah, they love each other, or at least Rio, she has that line where she's like, my black heart beats for you. Something happened in their past. I think they were in a romantic relationship in the past, and something terrible happened. And it broke them apart, and now she wants to kill her. So it's very much like a enemies to lovers type thing going on there. They're probably also of equal power, I would bet, and equal evil. So we'll see what happens with that.
Nice. That's what I love about a show is just when you bet on stuff at the beginning.
You really can intuit information based on what the lines and the actions are telling you, Justin.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I could look at that and be like, they're probably of equal power.
I'm sorry that they didn't turn to the screen and be like, Justin, so you know, we're of equal power. Here's what our backstories are. Here's what's going on. And I'll add you a whole dossier.
Not what I want. What I want is like some, and like, I don't want to overstate my criticism here, but when so much of everyone's motivations are completely undefined, especially when we get to the second episode and we introduce all these characters that are interesting, but they're behaving not like normal people do. Like they
don't
like each other.
Sharon like that because Sharon, don't you dare come at Sharon.
I think all the characters are
interesting. Can we talk about the fact that they killed her husband off screen? That was a bit of a bummer where she's like, not Mr. Davis, whatever his actual name is. Mr. Davis is his real name. She's like, Mr. Davis died a year ago. That was unnecessary. Why'd they kill him off? He was fun. Yeah. Vision's boss.
Dude, you don't know what Mr. Davis is like. I mean, come on. He could have been a real asshole.
Well, I actually, like, I looked it up and I was like, Fred Melamud, everybody loves Fred Melamud. Did he die? And he didn't die. And then I was like, well, did he get canceled? And he didn't get canceled. Everybody still likes him. So
maybe like Seasons of the Witch, he's only he's too expensive to do.
Too expensive. They couldn't pay those Melamed bucks.
Yeah, exactly. Mela money is hard to come by. But what I was going to say is, like, we lay them out, and then they're like, we hate you, but we're coming to your party, and we're going to do this difficult thing. It's a road in the woods that we don't know what it's about, but we are doing it. I was like, okay, here we go.
I will agree they all know what it's about.
I mean, it's a famous song in the witch community.
Yeah, 40 million copies.
Yeah.
That was the one thing that didn't scan to me in the episode, I will say.
What, the song? Oh. I thought Sharon was having a great time. I thought it was fun when she kind of like got caught up in it.
Yeah, no. I'm just saying that, like, this song, Ballad of the Witch's Road, sold 40 million copies. That's a lot of copies.
So
that's the sort of thing, like, we've seen a lot of MCU movies. At some point, somebody should have been listening to Ballad of the Witch's Road, plays on the radio or something like that. Captain America's list, they're like, you got to check out Star Wars and listen to Ballad of the Witch's Road.
Interesting. See, that didn't bother me at all. And you're just really? Like up in arms about the song.
Yeah. I have been writing a letter to Bob Iger at Disney every hour on the hour complaining about this. I've been handwriting them. Wow. And then making them into airplanes and throwing them across the country.
Oh, nice. Very whimsical. Iger loves that, you know, because Disney. everyone who works at Disney is whimsical. I will say, while we're talking about the song, I thought the song was awesome. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was a really well-shot sequence, mixing the interesting song, everyone doing it. I thought that performances in that were all really good. There was some fun to be had. A little roasting of Patti LuPone.
Got teared up, that one crying.
That was very cool, that one tear dropping. And that's the part where I feel like I was learning the most about these characters, as opposed to any of the scenes where they were talking, which is always surprising. But it's a testament to, I think, the performers in this show, that they were putting out the vibe in a way I thought was great and really got me excited for what's happening from this episode on.
I will agree with you that the Ocean's 11 second episode, putting the whole gang together to pull off this Witch's Roads heist, that's not what they're doing. But that was very much like, here's who I am. Here's my current situation. This is why I need to go on the Witch's Road. This is my motivation. And here we go. So hopefully we will find out more about them as we go throughout the season and throughout the episodes. But yeah, it was very like surface level with pretty much everybody. So I'll definitely agree with that. I think Patti LuPone probably got the most time out of them.
I mean, as she should. I mean, she killed it. Oh, that was absolutely fantastic.
That was great. And I'm most intrigued about her. Like, I never like seeing into the future stuff, but I think the way they're doing her powers and the way they should be performing it in terms of her divination is kind of like alarming. Off-putting in an interesting
way. Especially the way that one line where she was like, get off me! And it was like, oh shit, what's to come?
Yeah, I like that it seems like there's a cost. The magic that they're each going to be doing is going to really, because we have our protection witch, our green witch, our potions, and then our divination. Mm-hmm. And then Agatha, who's there to be fun and say,
leader.
I also really like Sasheer Zamata, who's Jennifer Kale. I thought she was very fun, and she's a good foil for Catherine Hahn. Like, there was some good repartee going on between them.
Yeah, the back and forth.
Also, tasting a candle is gross. I'm just going to mention that.
Well, really, I taste all the candles. Babies are delicious.
What? What did you say, Pete?
Babies are delicious.
Feels like a non sequitur.
Right. No, well, I mean,
just a confession. Is it a confession?
No, you're talking about eating candles, and then later in that scene, they talked about eating babies, and then, they are delicious.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. You're really on board with that. I do think, I think Sasheer, especially as a counterbalance to the Agatha we get at the end of the episode, Sasheer very dry, very just like coming in there with a undercutting line, I think is a nice balance to Agatha and Jen.
And I'll also throw out there, I'm interested in Ali An, who's playing Alice Wu Gulliver. I know her the least as an actress, so just as a viewer, I was like, all right, I don't know who you are necessarily. So didn't pop as much to me as the others. Also, she wants to be there the least. So it's always tough to get into a character who's like, I'd rather be anywhere else than in this show right now. But curious to see what's going on with her, because she definitely seems like she's central. I'll also throw out there, great to see all the Westview residents again. It was fun to see them pop up in the first episode and in the second episode. That was pretty enjoyable.
Especially that one dude who was like, are you seeing this shit? That was hysterical.
Yeah.
Is that the mustache guy? The mustache guy?
No, not mustache guy, but mustache guy is great. Like, he is funny as shit.
Very funny. We got to see Dottie, Emma.
Yeah.
I'm forgetting her full name now, but Emma Caulfield. That was fun.
Yeah.
And, Herb, who also is not his actual character's name, but Herb from WandaVision. The whole Wanda
is
comes
up. Is it Herb
up.
Or Herb?
Herb? I don't know. Herb?
It's I never seen a human named Herb.
It's a witch show. Call, they use herbs.
You don't call an herb a herb.
Yeah, I was going to name my kids Herb and Spices, but my wife said no.
That's fun. Yeah, well, the KFC will come after you, dude.
Yeah, they're very litigious about that. The whole nude scene, I thought, was great. Like, I
very
thought
funny.
Very funny, very well done. And just also, like, shouts to Marvel for going for it, because they've had funny butt nudity from men before, but women don't get that. Like, not even just in Marvel, but just in general, they don't get to do funny nudity. Like, the only example I can think of is Jennifer Lawrence in, what was the name of that movie that she did recently?
X-Men.
X-Men. Yeah, no, X-Men,
I mean,
first
sort
class.
I mean, she's in, she's basically nude. The comedy where she dates the kid.
Yeah. She got to do a funny nude scene there. But, like, that sort of evening the playing field, I think, beyond the fact that it was very funny and played in a very funny way, I think that's kind of important to do in terms of society and in terms of the show. When you have a majority female creative team and a majority female cast coming out and being like, hey, man, we're going to do this too. We're going to do the same level of humor that dudes have been allowed to do for decades at this point and throw it in there. Again, not to spend too much time on this, but I thought it was very smart on several levels.
I agree. Yeah. The movie was no hard feelings.
Yes. Yeah. Not a great movie, got to say.
That scene was really awesome, though.
There
the
was fight, some
the
really
scene
hilarious
scene
sequence
is
so
very
good.
Funny.
There was some
and
great
the piano
scene.
Playing scene.
The piano playing,
so,
yeah, the man-eater
so
song
and
gets
the,
you in the feels.
Coke
I mean,
Pepsi
come on.
Song, a Coke Pepsi joke, also very
yeah,
good.
Yeah, that was yeah, the same.
Should
we good. Leave?
I cried during the piano scene.
Yeah,
I thought you were going to say you cried during the Coke Pepsi joke.
Dude, I laughed so hard when he was like, should we leave? Oh, my God. So
good movie.
Anyway, by the way, everybody, listen to our No Hard Feelings podcast, No Hard Podcasts, that's available nowhere right now.
Speaking
of great,
feelings.
Great lines, there's some really banger lines in here. When she's talking about her, what was it, her pet or human, what was it, teen where she has such a, this is my familiar Toto. That was just so funny. Sisterhood of the Traveling Kegels was a hysterical line. There was a bunch of really funny lines in here that I was really impressed with.
Ironic? More like iconic.
I thought it was really sharply written across the board. Like, I agree with you that not every joke was a knee slapper, laugh out loud funny, but everybody was moving a pace and getting the lines out really sharply and really smartly. So, I don't know. Again, I was more of a fan of it clearly than you guys. But why don't we talk about some theory stuff that's going on? Let's talk about Teen. What do you think is going on with Teen? There's some popular theories here, but I'd love to hear from you guys.
I mean, the Nick Scratch, maybe I had Bad Boy Alert in my brain, but like, isn't he going to be Nick Scratch?
Well, right? I think there's two possibilities, right? The one that makes the most sense for the plot that the way they've set it up is Nick Scratch. Like, if he shows up, Agatha's not being able to see him. They go on the road together. And what is he? I forget the exact phrase, but he's like, the road gives you what you want the most. I think there's no way we end up with, at the end of the show, they're like, and we both got power, the end. You know? Yeah. If what they want the most turns out like she wants her son, and the son wants a mother, and there you go. That's how we get that thing. Alternately, the other alternate theory going into here was that he is Billy Maximoff, a.k.a. Wiccan, the character from Young Avengers.
Oh.
And I do think there's some indications there as well. Like, I think...
Could be.
he repeats the spell multiple times. Like, he says it very quickly, which is how Wiccan uses his powers in the comics. He also looks exactly like Wiccan in the comics. But I will throw out there, give it, and maybe this is overthinking it, but giving WandaVision how the whole Quicksilver shows up and he turns out to be Ralph Boner, I wonder if they're doing a similar thing here where fans are going to watch this and be like, of course he's Wiccan. He's Wiccan. He's Billy Maximoff. He's going to end up, this is how the Scarlet Witch comes back to life at the end of the show. But actually, he's Nicholas Scratch. And that's the thing, like we're saying, makes the most sense for the emotional arc of the series.
I'm hoping it was going to be something where it's like Darcy's child. You know, we can pull Darcy into this world. You know what I mean?
Mm. Well, actually, that's another thing I was wondering about today. Do you think we're going to get any MCU cameos? Like, is this that sort of show?
Well, I don't know about a lot, but I'm hoping for a couple more. You know what I mean?
Don't you think we see Scarlet Witch at some point?
They talked about her so much. Yeah.
I got to think she's, you know, we're going to maybe see a vision that she was the body at the beginning of the first episode or something.
Well, she's definitely the body. And like, in case it was unclear.
But we're going to see, we're going to actually see her.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you're doing the right structure for a season, you introduce the Scarlet Witch is dead. That is something Agatha is dealing with. She moves beyond it, but we need to loop back to that by the end. And like you're saying, whether it's like that's something she needs to fight on the Witch's Road, or maybe that is in a big way, like the way we get the Scarlet Witch back to life. Because I'll throw out there, like, if Joe Locke's teen is Billy Maximoff, he talks about his parents a little here. He shuts off a phone call from his boyfriend. If he actually is Wanda's kid and he doesn't realize it, but what he wants the most is for her to come back to life, that's something potentially that could happen at the end of the show as well.
Yes. The only thing, though, I feel like what other character could we encounter? From a story perspective, Doctor Strange, right, would make some direct sense. But I don't think there's going to be any larger moves in that direction. And then from a business sense, I sort of doubt Marvel's in the market for putting any big moves in their television or shows right now. I think they're trying to sort of keep everything a little bit more standalone, bite size, rather than like what's been the modus operandi in the past.
I mean, I'll throw out there, to Pete's point, I could see Darcy and Jimmy Woo come back if they do loop back to WandaVision in some way. I don't know how necessarily that would work. We could also get Paul Bettany as well, because he was obviously part of that show. So I think those are all possibilities.
And we do have a show of The Vision coming.
Right, so which they're referring to that as like the third part of a trilogy. So it could potentially set that up in some way. I guess we'll see.
Selfishly, it would be fun to see She-Hulk in there.
Just for a walk by or something. Bigfoot style. I agree with Justin that, or at least like I'm hoping this is very insular. I'm hoping this just focuses on Agatha and this coven and doesn't distract with, and then Captain America shows up or whatever, but I guess we'll see. And then the other one is about Rio and Agatha's relationship. What do you think is going on there?
I mean, I agree with you that it does make sense if it's like, you know, friends, lovers, enemies, some sort of dichotomy there. But also, like, what if this is all Scarlet Witch is at the core of this show, it feels like. So I feel like it's actually where does she factor in as well? And I bet there's a backstory that involves the three of them.
Classic love triangle.
You got a green, a purple, and a red. There you go. Yeah. That's it.
The vomit rainbow.
Anything else about the show before we move on to our final section here?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that, like, we were talking a little bit about some of the shots and the kind of like shot where we saw the witch road that was all purple leaves and then the big moon there. It was just such a cool, inviting, like, hey, are you ready for this adventure? And I thought that was such a great shot. Super impressed with it. And then also the scary stuff with the kind of creepy moving Salem 7 there was just, There's a lot of different things going on in the show, and they did a lot of stuff really well.
And they left Senor Scratchy behind, right? The rabbit?
Yeah, they did.
You know, the rabbits, they could come out of hats. Mm-hmm. I bet we see him again.
All right.
You take a rabbit down a hole with you, though. I mean, come on. That's just, you know.
Yeah.
Classic expression. Yeah. Before we wrap up here, why don't we go to our vision board where we talk about what we expect or what we want to happen next. We're going to be going to one episode a week starting next week. So what do you want to see or what's on your vision board for episode 3? Justin?
I love the sort of storybook nature that the show took on as soon as we hit the song. It felt like it really just locked into a type of storytelling. Everyone has a little role. We have like a contentious relationship. I want to see them sort of all the different witches in the coven reveal a little bit about themselves, get a little bit of backstory, maybe focusing on one of them each episode or two of them, probably more likely given the timing. And then just like some fun, surprising, the apple trees throw apples at you from Wizard of Oz style reveals. Like, I wanted to get weird with this show.
Yeah, Justin took my answer, but yeah, I'm hoping that
You were going to say the thing about the apples?
No,
you're going to say apples, trees that throw apples?
What I was going to say is I hope that along the road, either they get split up or something happens where we're getting like two at a time, like their backstory, because, you know, obviously we want to hear more about Sharon and, you know, how she made it from the 70s show to 90s show to this, you know, so.
Same character.
Yeah. And then, you know, because it is such a interesting, weird show, like let's lean into that, whether it gets more creepy or more different kinds of things.
You think we're going to get a Fez cameo?
Oh, dude, come on, man. That would be sick.
Makes a lot of sense. I agree with everything you guys are saying. And the other thing, I know I've been saying this all episode long, but I just want to see more of the plaster, as I call her. Like, I think it would be great if she comes back on the show. So that would be a lot of fun.
The Plaza,
baby. Gotta get their shoes back.
Mm-hmm. Well, eventually, that's the last thing.
Yeah, there's probably sticks on that road and stones. They're going to like really scratch up their feet. Yeah. So a plot line dealing with that, I would say, where they're like, ouch, my feet.
Soft leaves, man. That's, you don't need shoes.
Mm, nice. Cool. Yeah, Pete famously barely wears shoes. Pete, you should try living in New York City sometime because this is a shoe palace, basically.
Yeah, I did for 22 years, my friend.
Barefoot.
I feel like I would have seen you. I always say. Yeah, I would have bumped into you if you were living here for that long.
We're getting far afield, so why don't we wrap up here? We will be back every week talking about the individual episodes of the show. If you'd like to support the show and all the shows we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to
Facebook. Every Tuesday?
Yeah, and YouTube, come on out. We would love to chat with you about Agatha All Along. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show. At Comic Book Live on Twitter/X, Comic Book Club Live on TikTok and Instagram, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you on the Witch's Road.
Yeah, we'll see you on the road, bro. Blast me, you bitches, is what we say.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
this country was built on a distinctly American work ethic. But today, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries, sending away good jobs and diminishing our capability to make things. American Giant is pushing back against that tide. They make the kind of high-quality clothing staples you need for a comfortable, stylish, and active summer wardrobe. Like vintage-style tees, tough tank tops, breathable polos, lightweight sweatshirts, shorts, and so much more. All made right here in the USA. From growing the cotton to adding the final touches. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs for seamsters, cutters, and factory workers in towns and cities across the United States. And it's about more than an income. Jobs bring pride, purpose. They stitch people together. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.